Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Explaining History YouTube channel, and continuing with our theme of looking at the political workings of the Nazi state, I'm going to look today about this idea of polycratic centres of power within the Nazi regime. So previously, what we'd seen was that Nazism, like a kind of parasite, if you will, inserts itself into a reasonably well-functioning, or previously reasonably well-functioning and legalistic system of governance. Nazism is inherently kind of counter-legalistic or anti-legalistic. It views the concept of the rule of law as really something of an irrelevance, useful sometimes, if it can get you what you want, but secondary a distant second to the primacy of racial thinking and a racial revolution that Nazism is trying to bring about. And the result of this insertion of this kind of foreign culture into an otherwise well-ordered system means that you have all sorts of kind of chaotic outcomes. Two systems have to coexist together. The first is what we would describe as a normal state, or some historians call it the normative state, which is the normal system that previously existed of President, Reichschancellor, Cabinet, Reichstag, and bureaucracy, police, courts, the Landtag, and all that that had been established in 1918. And then this new force of what you could call just Führer power, which some historians call the prerogative state, is inserted into that. Something that has its source of legitimacy from the person of the Führer, of Hitler himself, as opposed to the weakened and now eviscerated Weimar Constitution. And this has its coup de grace in 1934, when Hitler is makes himself Führer, and the armed forces agree a personal oath of loyalty to Hitler, not to Germany, not to the Republic, to Hitler himself. And as a result, Hitler and his own personal power incorporate the levers of real power in the state, which is the use of military force. The state and the legal system were subordinate to Hitler and suborned to Hitler throughout 1933, gradually. But the reality was that in many ways they were allowed to continue functioning as they had before. Partly that Hitler, being of quite an indolent and lazy character, probably was disinclined to interfere with things which would take up time and effort. Also, the fact remains that even in a fascist Nazi dictatorship, the day-to-day functioning of life has to go on. The issuing of permits for housing the design of the law to prosecute everyone from shoplifters to murderers. And contrary to the popular view of Nazism, throughout the Nazi era, some checks and balances, really up until the war, checks and balances continued to exist, particularly when it came to the workings of the Nazi camp system. If you read K.L., the brilliant, brilliant history of the Nazi camps by Nicholas Vashman, he makes the point that there were several investigations of SA men at camps across Germany where prisoners were murdered or prisoners were brutally treated, and that there was still, in 1933 and 1934, judges who were willing to take the SA to task. And the Nazi state did very little about this. It certainly didn't tell the judges what they could and couldn't do. On the general pecking order, a ham-fisted SA man who had murdered an inmate was lower down than a judge who wished to investigate this. And the Nazi state, not particularly well established by the end of 1933... that it was still going through a process of consolidation of its power, was unwilling to cause itself unnecessary hassle and unnecessary bad publicity by taking on the judiciary. There was a much more important subversion of the judiciary, which was the building of a parallel system of justice in the guise of people's courts and extrajudicial detention in concentration camps. So the a head-on fight with the judges wasn't necessary, and perhaps if they wanted to investigate and arrest an SA man from time to time, that was all to the good, and it kind of served the SA man in question right for getting caught in the first place. So yes, laws were passed and administrated, and regulations and bureaucratic life continued in Germany, and they were implemented in much the same way as they had been done, a great many of them, before 1933. When we look at the history of Nazi Germany, and look at things like the Nuremberg Laws, these leap out at us as being singularly important, and of course they are, but they existed alongside a host of other more mundane regulations that predated Nazism and really were considered trivial in the eyes of Hitler and didn't need to be altered per se. This normality, what cultural theorists call the everyday, would be periodically and with greater frequency punctured by what we can call Führer power, the arbitrary decision-making of Hitler. That was inherently anti-bureaucratic and, of course, generally rather arbitrary. Hitler tended to make policy up on the hoof, as the Nuremberg Laws show, and Hitler believed that he was there really to challenge established elites within the bureaucracy, the judiciary, and the professional world, and that in doing so, he would shake up the kind of complacency and the control that they had over the levers of power in German life. And this would obviously prevent there from being challenges to Hitler in the future if particular power structures were subverted. But it also meant that German society was far more malleable in Hitler's eyes to be reshaped and refashioned. The thing about civil services the world over is that they are inherently they're there inherently to inhibit radicalism. The civil servants of Great Britain, Germany, America, wherever, see gradualism and continuity as being far more important than the erratic whims of one particular leader. And this is antithetical to Nazism. Nazism needs dynamism, radicalism, rapid, fast, and extreme change in order for it to be what it is. So when Hitler's edicts were announced, and the overriding importance of these political priorities would push through previous or pre-existing structures of law. Now, a classic example of that would be the creation of people's courts, as I mentioned, and the creation of protective custody, the principle of protective custody, which meant that the Gestapo could intimidate and force somebody into signing their rights away if they were also found innocent by a German court. They could be rearrested when they left that court and consigned into protective custody and put in a concentration camp. This was a direct result of Hitler's prerogative power, and it was something that in fact predated the Enabling Act. Now, the thing that has more of a consequence in this battle for control over government between the invasive force of Nazi ideology and the older bureaucratic norms was the gradual seepage of Nazism into different spheres of everyday life. So the law, which is always open for interpretation, begins to be interpreted through the filter of Nazi thinking. Not only are there is it that new laws are passed via the Enabling Act, or rubber-stamped, should I say, but existing laws are reinterpreted by Nazified judges and other Nazified authorities. Non-state Nazi Party organisations began to claim more and more of the responsibilities of the supposedly non-politicised state and also the organs of local government. And this is another example of the development of Führer power. This, the organs of the party, of which Hitler is the head of, which are directly responsible to the party and to Hitler, and believe that they are there not to carry out the workings of the state, but to carry out the workings of the Führer. These organs, these organisations, slowly start to engulf through the overlapping of duties between senior Nazis and ministerial posts. They begin to engulf and co-opt and annex parts of the workings of the state. And so gradually, over time, the boundary between state and party becomes very blurred, very confused, and deliberately so. Most modern historians of Nazi Germany, now the examples such as Ian Kershaw or Richard J. Evans or Lawrence Rees, put forward almost a new orthodoxy, really, that the Nazi state thrived on chaos, ran on chaos. There was a veneer of order, but behind the scenes, all sorts of confused and complicated infighting duplication of roles and all sorts of things like that. And I believe that Nazism required chaos. Nazism engendered chaos and existed within this institutional chaos, and it helped Nazism to operate. It helped Nazism really to thrive and develop and slowly kind of whittle away the power of the normative state.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hitler, of course, did not believe in a depoliticized state and did not believe that the state should have any kind of political neutrality. The state, as he was concerned, was there as a vehicle for racial change, for racial struggle, and that's what its purpose was. And if it didn't fulfil that purpose, or aspects of it didn't fulfil that purpose, then it was no good and not necessary. Noakes and Pridham say, in place of the old image fostered by Nazi propaganda of the regime as a coldly calculating, ruthlessly efficient machine, research over the past 20 years has revealed the Third Reich to have been a labyrinthine structure of overlapping competencies, institutional confusion, and chaos of personal rivalries. The fields of propaganda and cultural policy, for example, saw permanent internecine warfare between Goebbels as Reich Minister of Propaganda, Rosenberg as agent for the supervision of the Nazi Weltanschauung, Otto Dietrich as Nazi press chief, and Bernhard Rust as Reich Minister of Education, and Philipp Bühler as head of censorship, office, among others. So that gives you a flavour of how poorly organised Nazism actually was. And again, as I argue, this is entirely by design. The interpretations that historians come up with is that Hitler rather liked having ministers squabble over areas of prestige and control and policy making, things that made them look important. And also the creation of new posts, new ministries that duplicated each other's work were an attempt to try to infiltrate the workings of the normative state. And another example, if you look at the workings of German foreign policy, Hitler's foreign minister, Konstantin von Neurath, faced a difficult challenge from Hitler's foreign policy advisor and then ambassador to Great Britain, and then finally foreign minister after he replaces von Neurath, Joachim von Ribbentrop. Ribbentrop was a champagne salesman and had no knowledge of foreign policy, diplomacy, diplomatic etiquette or convention. He didn't know what one did when one met a fellow ambassador, or how one spoke diplomatically, or, you know, the art, really, of diplomacy. Hitler said of Ribbentrop, "This is the man who can tell me, this is the only man who can tell me anything about what happens outside Germany's borders." Because Hitler was highly ignorant, not particularly cosmopolitan or well-travelled at all. He'd been to France in the war, and that was about that. And he looked to Ribbentrop. He saw Ribbentrop as this gauche international figure who had been across Europe. Well, Ribbentrop had been to Belgium and Great Britain as a champagne salesman and made friends with Lord Londonderry, the peer. But his actual knowledge of the workings of Great Britain comes straight from his imagination. He assumed that there were 200 aristocratic families in Britain, and that those aristocratic families would be the ones that would decide British policy. And the reality is, it is Parliament and the civil service that do these things. Ribbentrop, therefore, was able to tell Hitler all sorts of fanciful and nonsensical tales. Hitler believed in their entirety because he was impressed with Ribbentrop, and Hitler was somebody who believed that his instincts were right, and if he went on instinct and was able to look a man in the eye, then he could get the measure of that fellow. The reward that Ribbentrop has is to establish his own foreign policy think tank, his own foreign policy organisation, Bureau Ribbentrop, which sits on the Wilhelmstrasse directly across the road from the German Foreign Ministry. Ribbentrop was able to go around the world because he had the backing of the Führer, because he was an agent of Führer power, and he was able to go around the world and cancel out the state German foreign policy. An example where that happened would be when Ribbentrop went to Japan. Von Neurath had been forging a deal with China. There had been German military advisors from the Weimar and the Nazi era go to China and help Chiang Kai-shek's nationalist government. This, of course, was not an act of charity, and the interest that was generated by the possibility of influence in China by Germany was for raw materials and the vast raw materials that China has. Germany was resource poor, and especially during the period of rearmament, this resource poverty was something that created all manner of acute economic crises and bottlenecks within the German economy. So finding a country who could, in return for military help and military training and expertise, supply Germany with raw materials was extremely important. The interest that Ribbentrop took in Japan, who from 1932 onwards had invaded Manchuria and had designs on the rest of China, was at direct odds with this policy. Ribbentrop, however, was not thinking in economic terms or strategic terms, but in far more romantic and impulsive ways of reasoning. He imagined that the martial and warrior-like Japanese culture would be a perfect match in the East to German militarism in the West, and these two powers would at one point see eye to eye and divide the world between them. This arguably comes close to happening during the Second World War, but one of the reasons why it fails to happen is because both countries run out of resources, which was arguably the problem that Neurath had foreseen in the first place. However, Neurath is progressively sidelined and Ribbentrop favoured more and more by Hitler. And because we transition towards this Führer state, those who are favoured by Hitler go far, and those who are seen as established centres of power who are not within the Hitler inner circle do not. Ribbentrop, of course, falls out of favour later on following his failures as as an ambassador and then later a foreign minister, as these shortcomings come to light. The period of the Third Reich, the 12 years in which it existed, institutionally and organisationally, is an aberration. German bureaucracy throughout the 19th and the rest of the 20th century is a model of bureaucratic efficiency. And Nazism, despite the image, the monolithic image that we are presented with, was anything but orderly. Not only was there this endless confrontation and wresting of power from the normative to the prerogative systems, but also there are different centres of power, such as obviously the army, and in particular the general staff. And as we look at World War II through various podcasts that are upcoming, we'll look at how Hitler gradually eroded the power of the general staff and came to see them as the enemy. There were the interests of German business, and the German business community collaborated, cooperated, and tried to extract concessions from the regime, and the development of the SS and the various different offices of Hitler himself, the deputy Führer's office, the party chancellery, and the party cadre organisation. And all these different power groups competed with one another, and particularly competed for access to Hitler because of the development of the Führer state. Hitler becomes the supreme font of decision making, law making, and favour. He becomes essentially the figure of a medieval king inserting himself into a modern governmental system. And in that manner, he holds court. He has an inner circle of favourites. He spends little time in Berlin, spends much of his time at Berchtesgaden, and the favoured, who are invited to visit him, really have to come as one would have done to a medieval monarch and pay fealty and allow him to hold court as the figure he imagined himself to be. Okay, right, well, we've gone on a little bit too long here on the polycratic state that emerged from 1933 onwards, but we'll be returning to this topic over the next few weeks, and it's good to look in depth at the kind of the mechanics of the Nazi state instead of focusing simply on the media image of Nazism, which can often be wildly misleading. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this and you find it useful. Do give us a good write-up on iTunes if you can, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.